Welcome to Binary Jazz. Binary Jazz.
You can't. No. Stop that right there.
We've already failed.
It's rare that you solicit a Jesus out of me, but that did it. That was.
This is a podcast where we talk about some things. Usually there's a topic. Yeah. Sometimes we avoid the topic. Sometimes there's no topic at all. There's three of us. You can find us online, binaryjazz.us. We do things. Yeah.
Look, here's the thing. I posited several episodes ago that this is a show that is being used for torture in a future prison system. Is that what I said? It was something along those lines. It sounds much worse now.
Yeah, it does.
And I don't mean it that way. I just mean that, like, culturally, the world has changed. Idiocracy is what I'm thinking of, right? That's the future. I have to figure out how to get rid of this meeting is being recorded. Modal, hold on. Okay.
Did you just click got it?
I did, but I had to like pivot all the way over here and hit the trackpad. I have this new mouse that has a button on the side that lets me swap between computers, which is great.
Listener, he just held up a computer mouse.
Yeah, I have this new mouse. And Steven, cute tail. No, but it's great. I can't do it without looking at it. And I felt I needed to make my point and engage, and I couldn't fiddle with the mouse. Now, obviously later on, I will exhibit my ADHD and we'll be talking and I will be fiddling with all sorts of stuff as I listen. But at the moment, I felt like I should be paying attention as I was talking about us being used to torture prisoners in the future.
You don't think of us very highly.
That's the problem is when I say it that way, I don't mean that it's is a negative thing, as negative as it sounds. I mean, like,
you don't mean
I expect the world
this podcast is used to torture prisoners as a negative thing.
Right. I'm not sure why that's hard to swallow.
Cool.
What I mean is, like, the world has changed and it's a different place. Banter is not what it once was. I really am thinking of Idiocracy, honestly, and the way people communicate and just how much that's degraded in the future. And also, I watched that movie again.
Oh, good.
And yeah, that's why it's on my mind. Man. What a future in store for humanity.
Well, speaking of torturing others.
Sure, let's go there.
We get mail, not very often. The most recent mail that we had gotten prior to this week, I guess, was somebody had used our GenreNator API to create a React app. But more recent than that, we got an email in Russian. And of course, I don't speak Russian, nor do I know what the Cyrillic characters say. So I went to trusty old Google Translate, and I thought that I would share, because often when we get mail, since it's such a rare occasion, we generally read it on the show. So I thought that I would share this valuable email that we got translated via Google Translate from Russian. You're going to say something, Gary, or are you going to? Okay, good.
Probably, but it wasn't important.
It is as follows. Come on. A gorgeous thing. Interesting facts and events from all over the world. Something interesting facts and also hear interesting facts on various topics. That is the whole of the
email. Maybe the best review we've gotten.
There was a link. To some Russian website that I'm sure as hell not going to go to ever. But
yeah, nor, I'll fire it up.
Nor will I invite our listeners to go there.
Can you drop the link in Slack? I would love to fire this up and see.
Sure, I will warn you. I guess we should preempt this experiment by saying that we at Binary Jazz do not condone the visiting of random Russian spam links. And Gary is taking this upon himself, and we are not responsible for whatever happens to his computer as a result of visiting this link.
He just signs off.
I'm replaced by like Max Headroom, but like the Russian version. Like Max. It's a link to an article in Russian. No surprise. Published sometime in 2019 at 4:23 p.m. It seems pretty innocuous.
Seems. All right, I guess I will. Now my curiosity is piqued, and I want to see if there's like a way to translate the page.
I was going to suggest like maybe it ran some JavaScript in the background that I'm not aware of. I did open it in like an incognito block everything mode, like I don't trust you mode. But it didn't seem, I mean, of the spammy sites I visited in my lifetime, not even top 1,000.
Yeah, I guess that's accurate. Yeah, this just seems like some travel blog. But let's see what it says.
The image is great. This like airplane, like flying straight towards you is a little intimidating.
Detect language, please. Airline news.
Boring.
Did you all see, I love this. I love this and I hate this. Let me just dig into it and then I'll explain all my thoughts on it. I have so many thoughts on so many things, but specifically Delta Airlines.
If you're
not vaccinated, there's a $200 surcharge added to your health insurance, which is like, oh, that's great. Like surface level, fantastic. Next level, like, okay, this is capitalism enforcing people behaving in reasonable ways. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go that far because there are actually, it's a very small percentage of people that are not vaccinated that have good reasons to not be vaccinated. However, there probably are employees at Delta that are going to have to pay the surcharge that can't be vaccinated. Most likely none of them fall in that bracket of under 12, but I don't know. It's Delta Airlines. Perhaps they do employ children in other countries, like for airline maintenance or airplane maintenance, because that's a thing that I found out when I used to travel a lot, was that for maintenance, for like some of their long haul stuff, it's way cheaper to have mechanics in like the Philippines or Indonesia work on the plane instead of in the States. And, you know, like, I don't know, this is like, this is sort of like the NASA, like, you know, flying astronauts to the moon. Like, it's great until you realize that this thing is like maintained and built by the lowest bidder. Okay. As you like are, you know, 30,000 feet above the Arctic Circle or whatever.
I don't generally fly above the Arctic Circle.
So
generally
the flights take, I mean, you might not know it unless you're looking at the map pretty closely. Like, but like flying to Asia out of Detroit, like,
you cut across.
Which I'm like, oh, awesome. If we crash, like we'll surely perish, which was true over the ocean anyway. It didn't matter. But in my head, the ocean seemed safer because I can swim. I don't know.
I read one of the stupid things that showed up in my Quora digest, which I still read because sometimes there's just like random shit in there that is just fascinating that people are asking.
I have no idea what those two words mean together.
Quora digest. Quora is a website where people ask questions and other people answer them. And a digest is a collection of things sent in email form in this context. And in this case, Quora sends me a bunch of questions that have been answered that I might be interested in based on my behavior, I guess. Anyway, they seem to think that I wanted to know, and I did actually want to know what I should do, because this is totally going to happen, if I jump out of an airplane and my parachute fails. Should I aim for the water? And the answer was no, do not aim for the water. First of all, there is a backup parachute, which I didn't know about because I'm never going parachuting. skydiving, like ever. This is not knowledge I will ever find useful, but I found it interesting. There's a backup parachute that apparently can be deployed in case of emergency. It's not as smooth. It's like has a rougher landing, whatever. And you would want to deploy that, obviously, and then thank your rigger by buying them a beer because they just saved your life. But if in the very minuscule chance that both your parachutes fail, what you are supposed to do is aim for trees, because hopefully you'll get caught by the trees and the parachutes, because like you'll have pulled them out and they just fail to inflate or whatever. So hopefully you'll get caught in the trees and it will prevent you from slamming to the earth. And then as you get close to the trees, you curl up into a ball to protect, you know, your organs and whatever. And that's what you would do if you would if you had jumped out of an airplane and both parachutes failed.
It really assumes that you have the foresight.
Oh yeah.
To think things through in a moment of adrenaline.
Sure. Adrenaline. It said that the reason why you wouldn't want to aim for the water, besides the impact, which could probably kill you, is because you would be likely, like, unless you have like gear, you're going to get caught up in the parachute. You're going to get like,
if you survive, you're going to drown.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Exactly. Yeah. Oh. So you don't want to aim for the water. You want to aim for the trees. So I guess the same thing might be true for falling out of an airplane.
But you're not falling out of the airplane. You're in the airplane.
The airplane is crashing. Yeah. I don't know what to do if that's the case. I'll probably have to like ask that question on Quora. I'm sure somebody already has. Everybody has asked every question that's ever been thought. So.
So back to Delta.
Sure.
Airlines. So we've got like the first couple levels. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole deeper level there.
There's two levels.
Like that the Delta Airlines is the one that is actually doing this.
Well, you're seeing this more and more.
The Delta variant.
And I think that something interesting is happening very soon. And that is the cost sharing between insurance companies for COVID treatment ends in the US. I should preface this all by saying this is a culturally unique occurrence for living in a third world country with a huge military that has enough extra cash to handle PR to the rest of the world. I have so much to unpack here.
just gonna watch that process unfold.
Oh man, this is unique to the US because obviously our healthcare system is an absolute joke and is like everything else in the US and is capitalist. So if you don't have money, you die. So this cost sharing thing ends at the end of this month, which is just a couple of days away. So I expect what we'll start seeing is announcements from insurance companies who will not cover COVID treatment unless you've been vaccinated or have a medically valid reason for being unvaccinated. Although I say that second part, and I'm not actually sure the insurance companies will do that because that requires actual human interaction and like a bit of a soul, which is just not what they're built on. But so there's that. Like, so there's really like this whole capitalist system that's like, well, it's going to be expensive to treat these people, which is why we're going to charge them $200. So there's another layer, right? So we're like three layers in. The fourth layer is like literally that. Like it's capitalism saying like, oh, it's more profitable to have employees that have been trained and are not dying or in the hospital than it is to train new employees. That's it. That's the truth of the capitalist approach to treating COVID. And when I look at that and frame it that way, I feel a bit sick to my stomach, but then I also am like, yeah, I mean, like it's very clear that the Republican Party for all the posturing is literally the party of capitalism. That's it. Like the Republican Party is like, you know, it fuck your feelings. Is it profitable? Like, that's it. That's the end of the day. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. So, thanks Delta, I guess, for spinning it in the media to appear as though you're doing the right thing to increase shareholder value. And as a shareholder, I guess, thanks. Fuck.
I didn't ever not once interpret it as something that they were doing like as a in any sense way that they were doing the right thing, it immediately struck me as like, oh yeah, it's expensive to treat people with COVID. It was actually like when I read that headline, it was in conjunction with snippet that said that it costs on average $40,000 to treat somebody who's been hospitalized from COVID. So like, you know, if you multiply that times the percentage of people that aren't going to get vaccinated, and then like, yeah, $200 a month per person is going to, you know, justify the cost it would take to continue to operate with those people not being vaccinated and likely getting sick and then likely being, you know, potentially being hospitalized and having to pay all that money. Yeah, it never appeared to me like there was ever good intentions. It was like accidental good intentions. Like maybe it'll force people to get vaccinated, but not, that wasn't the intent. It was just like, it was totally like about the bottom line. So it was accidentally a good thing. But yeah, Delta doesn't give a shit about you. So there goes those Delta sponsorships out the window. Yeah. Delta doesn't give a shit about you.
There you go.
Delta Airlines. Fly Delta.
I was
said by a proud Delta Sky Miles holder. This
flight.
I was describing Canadian politics to my parents, and it just got me thinking about how, I mean, any political system is kind of weird, but like the fact that there are basically two parties in the States, and how problematic that is, and how it's like, but there's other ways. But then also how confusing, I mean, like I'm still learning Canadian politics and how it all works. So I don't know if it's easier, but like, I'm just like, oh, but there's like more opinions in the stew.
Yeah.
So here's a,
yeah, I feel like if I lived in England, I would have a better grasp on like British Parliament and MPs and how that system works, but like I just hear the words and I see occasional things on TV where or YouTube videos or whatever where they're like yelling at each other, and like I understand that like there is like the chamber is divided in a way such that, or like when there's debates, there is a division between the two people debating such that they are a sword length each apart so that they don't stab each other to death. And that there are these like traditions from like carried over from hundreds of years. It just seems really weird, but I'm sure it makes sense to the people who live there. And it would make sense to me if I lived there, but like from the outside, it's just like a weird dance of political theater. You're going to say something, Gary.
I was going to say, I posted in Slack, I talked to a friend this morning and I was lamenting this dystopia, and he countered and said, like, you know, that's fine, but like, you're, you know, what are you whining about? Like, you're actually really well positioned for this. Like, you're already homeschooling your kids. You work from home in an industry that's, you know, certainly not as impacted as other industries. And, you know, I mean, you're in a large enough house, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, and totally valid points. And then he followed up by saying that he lives in Hillsborough County, which is Tampa in Florida, that there's not enough liquid oxygen available. So the water smells because they're not able to properly treat it at the moment because of the increase in need for oxygen at the hospitals. And I'm like, if I wrote, like, he said this, and I'm like, it breaks a part of my brain, honestly, that, and it's back to capitalism, honestly. We have this whole concept, and it's, and we looked at the Japanese, and they have this idea of like just-in-time delivery and everything. We went, well, okay, that's great from a capitalist perspective. You're not paying to borrow money to purchase manufacturing equipment, manufacturing pieces, because you're getting them just right when you need them, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. And so because hospitals are for profit, that same logic applies, which means that there's no, you know, here's our regular demand for oxygen. And perhaps it's increased over the last 18 months, but when the spike hit, there's no capability at the manufacturing level to provide more of it because, you know, they're only manufacturing the demand. And it's like the whole thing's fucked. the whole thing is just absolutely fucked, because it's everywhere along the way, someone has to make a buck. And because of that, there's no flexibility. There's no, it doesn't matter if customer service is forgiving and a caring person, because the actual like machinery behind it can't accommodate that at any kind of scale. This entire like process of automation, it's only going to get worse. It can't get better. It absolutely can't. There's no way to make it better.
It's interesting. I'm just thinking, you mentioned the customer service is great. I was thinking about a recent John Oliver where he was talking about the hacking things that have happened recently, where they've held systems for ransom, and like many, mm-hmm. like a lot of essentially these there aren't hackers anymore. There are like hacker consortiums that have developed a software that can just hold systems for ransom. And so like you as an individual, like I could, you know, purchase access to this software and, you know, hack into some like, you know, the electrical company, you know, and hold their system for ransom. And they'll pay it because they don't have the technical expertise to actually protect themselves. But what was interesting about that story was not about the technology, because I already know that stuff and that's terrifying. I didn't know necessarily that there's a software that people use, that they don't need to actually be smart anymore. That's cool. I should have assumed that that was the case because, you know, capitalist society. The thing that was interesting was that these systems, these third-party systems that people pay to hack other people, have their own customer service, both from the hacker side. Like if you are the one that is demanding a ransom, you have customer service about that you can interact with, but also from the person being ransomed side, so that they can learn about like how to create an account with Coinbase or whatever to send the Bitcoin. Like they need to have some sort of customer service to walk them through that process, because obviously these people are not technically savvy enough to like have prepared their systems in the first place. So obviously they're not going to know how to like, you know, send $5 million in Bitcoin to some, you know, hash. So there's actually, you know, customer service, and the customer service apparently is quite nice. They're very good at their job and they are very helpful apparently.
So pursuant to that, you remember the ransomware attack on the
ransomware, the gas, is the word,
or the oil.
Yes. Yeah.
The oil pipeline not too long ago. I think it was Pennsylvania or West Virginia, wherever the company's headquartered. And so they shut down production. Yep. They did not shut down production because that system was attacked by ransomware. They shut down production because the system attacked by ransomware was their billing system, and they were concerned they weren't going to be able to retroactively bill for what they shipped out. So this is such a perfect fucking example of like the capitalist imperative to protect the bottom line at all costs. Like, oh, sorry, we can't ship it. Like, it's not that we can't ship it. We physically can. We have staff available. It's cheaper to pay them to do nothing because we're worried that we might not be able to bill you for it. And so rather than give it away for free and figure it out, you know, let's just not ship it in the meantime. It's like...
Well, that means it was a very well targeted attack. Like they could have targeted any other system, but they targeted the billing system because they knew that the shipping
company. It was easy to get into because the password on the router was the default password.
Oh,
I'm sorry, on the VPN system that they didn't actually use any longer. Their IT department had not disconnected from their network the old VPN system with default password in place.
So use better passwords. Change your passwords, people. Use
two-factor authentication. Don't use passwords at all, and just refuse to create accounts.
Well, that's obviously the better solution, but that's not going to happen.
Do you think so? We've talked about the show Alone.
Yes.
What's Alive? That was that movie, right?
Back sure.
The soccer team that crashed in the Andes.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Alone is the TV show.
Yes.
About surviving in the wilderness.
Yes.
Do you think that there is just like an undercurrent of human interest in that as an alternative to like this, like just constant connected? I mean, because what do? We show up for work and we sit in front of our screens, and then like, you know, optimistically we spend the weekends and do things away from screens, but when it's dark out and it's hot or cold outside and getting ready for bed, like we flip on the TV, which is connected to the internet. And
the fascinating thing to me about
informed by the advertisements that have been effective earlier in the day and blah, blah, blah. And it's just
the fascinating thing to me about alone. And one of the things that continues to keep my interest is the points of failure. Like where somebody goes from believing that this is a thing that they can and will do for an extended period of time, and the point at which they say, nope, I'm calling it. And sometimes that's like, you know, I injured myself. That is actually the rarest occasion of people leaving for like some sort of a medical evacuation. The last season that we just finished, which is season 3, there were 3 people that were evacuated for medical reasons non-voluntarily. Basically, they had starved themselves to such a severe degree that if they had stayed any longer, it would start to have permanent effects.
Yeah, organ shut. Yeah.
And that was probably the most depressing season to watch, because you have all these people and they believe that they can do it and they're pushing themselves and whatever, but they're also killing themselves at the same time. And you can see it happening over time. You can see like how like this big guy becomes more and more gaunt. You can see how this person goes from being like a vibrant human being to essentially looking like the people that you walk by and try to ignore when you're in a big city who are panhandling on the street. Like it's fascinating. And yet like many of them are like, no, I can still do this. I still have time. I've got one of them. And it gives you these little blurbs, which are like sometimes very cleverly like poised, like in relation to the things that are happening, where like the producers are either trying to hint that something might be like foreshadow something, or like just give you sort of an explanation of what you're actually witnessing. And there was one point where it like the dude was like talking about how he had dried 30 fish and they're in a bucket, and so if he rations that out and does one fish every 2 days, he can stay for another 60 days. Right. And the little blurb popped up and talked about food hoarding and how food hoarding is a symptom of starvation. Like when you start like thinking about like hoarding food, it's because your body is starting to like, you know, shut down and react to that. I don't know, to answer your question. I think there is a fascination with like getting away from like all of this. But the interesting thing to me about the show is how many of them, when they actually are out in the wilderness, can't do it. Like just can't. Like they're there. Like, so we're on season 4, which now they have teams. And the whole thing with the team is you have one person like on the beach or whatever in the place where their camp is, and the other person helicoptered in somewhere else and has to hike out to meet their partner. So that's the whole first part. And it starts off with 7 teams, and we're into like day, I want to say 8, and like 3 of those teams are already gone. And it's usually because the partner at base camp, something happened. They like one person like sprained their ankle. One person freaked out because they thought there was a bear. You know, like usually so far it's been just people just like you're there and you just can't do it. You just can't. You just your brain just like you just freak out and just like you're not thinking. Like you would think that like they've seen three seasons of the show that they know what to expect, but no, you go out there and you're just like you're on survival mode and you're just like, no, I can't do this. I actually physically cannot do this. And it's interesting that like there is that desire, like this idea that like, oh yeah, I can totally survive in the wilderness. I've done this type of stuff before. And then when you actually are out there and dealing with it in ways that people lived together before society existed, like people lived this way, maybe not like completely alone, but maybe completely alone sometimes. And they just like, we can't do it. We just can't do it. Like, we're just not prepared. Even if we've been out and done similar things, even if we've gone camping, like rough camping, even if we've like gone out and lived in the wilderness for a month or whatever, like we can't. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating how prepared the people that are most prepared for this sort of thing really actually are.
Yes, I absolutely would. Yeah. I mean, I looked sincerely after some trip back from Miami to Jacksonville and listened to a podcast about like the Mars environment that NASA has set up to see how people react living, you know, alone with delayed communication for a year. Like, I absolutely did some research on that to see if I could qualify. And like, I would, yeah, absolutely, 100%. Yes, I would put myself into that situation. And then like alone, like your survival rate is pretty high, right? Because of the medical checks. I mean, I guess there's still the likelihood you could be eaten by a predator or something, or injure yourself so badly and you're so far away from the medical team that, you know, they can't get there in time. But generally, you know, survival rate's pretty high on that show.
And I mean, nobody's died.
Yet. Yeah, the season it happens, their viewership's going to go through the roof, and I will have some kind of really pessimistic diatribe for you all.
Well, this has been the most uplifting episode yet, I think.
Yeah.
I know. I feel like we should like finish with like a hug and a song together. And I didn't mean to like bring it as such a downer, but I don't know. Like this, we're 18 months into this dystopian future that like, you know, some dystopian of the best writers. Yeah. Some of the best writers in the world didn't see this one and imagine what fiction will look like in 5 years as people parse this and it becomes like part of their conscious and then informs the way they write future dystopian novels. Like, you're gonna have to really bring your game for people to believe it,
you know? The way like kids, there is a thread on Twitter recently that was like, share your age and where you grew up and whether shooter drills were a thing when you were in school. Shooter drills were not a thing when I was in school. School shootings weren't a thing when I was in school. But now it's so commonplace that when it happens, like I saw a clip of a video that was like a girl that was like, yeah, I was ready for it because I'd been through this sort of thing before and I knew what to expect. And like, you know, like kids are so, I don't know, desensitized to the concept of an active shooter in their school that they like are like, they have skills now to deal mm-hmm. with that eventuality. And that it is something that is being drilled into them the same way that earthquake drills were drilled into me when I was in school. And that's the present. Huge. That's the present that we live in now. So the present that we will live in the future is those kids, all kids, are now going to be familiar with and experienced with what happens when there is a global pandemic. And that's going to be part of the cultural consciousness, the same way that school shootings have become a part of the cultural consciousness. So like, it's not even just fiction. It's going to be like everything. Like, what is this? What are these kids that are like in, you know, grade school now, like what is their experience and their perception of the world going to be when they are like, are, you know, new politicians and leaders and senators and presidents? And like this is a fascinating, like, I don't know, tangent that we have, like, just we're going down I don't know, it's fascinating.
It's only normal because it's it's back to the capitalist mandate, right? Like our position in the United States as being the world's arms dealer is that we have to have a tacit acceptance of firearms. And one of the results is that if everyone can have firearms, well, there's going to be some bad shootings. And that occasionally means kids are going
to
die.
Bad shootings as opposed to good shootings.
Yes, because part of the deal of being the arms dealer is like, clearly there have to be good shootings because it has to justify selling the fire for the firearms to exist, right? It's so fucked up. I had this massive argument with my dad years ago. I guess not that long ago, probably 2015, when it wasn't apparent that Trump was going to be the nominee for the Republican Party before the world turned absolutely up the fuck side down. And I had this shouting argument, Dad, you don't understand. Like, you know, like your kids are going to school or your grandkids are going to school and we have live shooter drills. That means that a teacher is talking to them about what to do if someone with a gun comes into school. Do you understand that? Like, fuck the Second Amendment. That's ridiculous. Why are we okay with this? Like, why is anyone okay? Why does anyone here like, oh, shooter drill at school? Why aren't people's reactions like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, absolutely not. Why aren't we like Australia? Like, no, nope, nope, nope. Firearms can't be in the wild. Fine, fix it. And the reason is because it's not profitable. I mean, it's like, you know, the whole conversation about billionaires paying taxes, like whatever. Like, you know, like let's sell some attack jets to some country when we're done with them. Like there's where the money is, you know? It's just, it's so, the rot is so deep. Yes, thank you for listening to this episode.
The Rot is So Deep is the new is the episode title.
The Rot is So Deep.
Where and like there's no benefit to looking back and saying where did it happen, right? But like, you know, looking forward, like where are the opportunities to like put a foot down and be like, no, we've gone far enough. I mean, because it like school shootings. Okay. Well, when it was students shooting the school, like that wasn't enough. When it was people coming into the school and shooting the school, that was enough. When it was people coming and shooting at elementary schools, that wasn't enough. Like, you know, where is the line where it's enough? You know, I don't know. That ship may have set sail, but there's going to be a time where it's like, you know, is it safe to go to the DMV?
There's an Overton window thing there that I don't know where that window shifts over into the guns are bad section when it's constantly being counterbalanced by like NRA propaganda. Like that's the problem, you know, like as much as that stuff comes out, like you would assume, oh, rational people will look at this and say guns are bad. And then like, they'll come in and say, but the only way to protect against guns is with more guns. And I don't know.
Yes. And how do you deal with that? Oh, we need more policing, obviously. Obviously.
Yeah. The policing is the problem. And police need to be behavioral scientists, as well as law enforcement, as well as like enforcers of public policy. And yeah.
Man. The good news is
there's another episode of Binary Jazz next week. That's the good news. And we'll have a better topic.
Yeah, I was really reaching. No, the good news is honestly, in spite of all this, there are people that are able to go out there and like make beautiful art. And there are conversations we can have that don't include this kind of ridiculousness. And there are children in the world that have fascination, and there are animals and plants growing, and like, in some places, it's safe to even breathe the air.
Not here.
But sometimes.
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter @BinaryJazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the forum on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.